Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. For today's story, we welcome back author Carmelo Rafala. Carmelo previously wrote the story, A Story of Kindness, which has also recently been accepted for publication in Nightblade. For this story, I'm the narrator. We have some great voices joining us. There is J. Marcus Xavier, producer of the amazing Silent Universe drama series. Then we have my favorite doctor, John Samar. I would kill to have a voice like John's. Also joining us is Jack Hosley, also known as Wander Wolf from the great Wander Radio podcast. And my son Neil lends his voice to us once again, along with Tony McCartney. And if you listen carefully, you'll even hear my wife, Anne Stringer. Now, on to our story. Mother Tongue by Carmelo Rafala. On a mission to tame a new world, man will turn against man, and even Mother Nature herself will have her say.
Can you see anything?
Asks John. I glance over at Alexei. He brings the binoculars up to his faceplate and peers out at the foggy beachhead to our right. Rolling banks of methane smog flitter across the thick ocean surface. The only sounds are the humming of the electric engine and the sloshing of sludge-like water beneath the boat.
I don't see a thing,
he replies.
Are you sure you saw something?
Just keep this position.
Alexei rolls his eyes and turns his back to John, then squints as he looks out and over the water again at the approaching land, as if that would help his vision any. He takes a cloth and wipes condensation from his helmet faceplate. The ice specks on the fog melt against the slight warmth his pressure suit emits.
The scanners picked up movement in this area just 20 minutes ago,
says Chan from the back of the boat.
And the airspace above is clear as ships.
The scanners must be developing an imagination,
I reply.
Either that or a sense of humor,
adds Alexei.
If there is anything left, any large herds at all, it'd be a miracle.
Yeah, funny.
I hear Chan sigh with irritation over my helmet speakers. We had come out from the outpost on a small island in the bay, searching, protecting our newly forming ecosystem. Our job is to cull the indigenous population to acceptable levels. Mine is to bag at least one specimen for a tycoon's private zoo in Delta City. Brings in a hefty sum. I hear the muffled sound of a seismic detonator in the distance, cracking the caldera of some sleeping fire god. The thick waters waver slightly with the shockwave. Not to worry about tidal waves. Most seas are only a few meters deep, and there are no real tides to speak of.
Haven't seen a Minoy in a year,
I say.
Radio in,
says Alexei.
Report a false alarm.
I reach absently for the transmitter in my suit arm. Despite Alexei's negative outflow, Chan's enthusiasm is still getting the best of him as he continues to check and double-check his instruments.
All right, this is working. It's
Alexei
working.
Glances
okay.
back at
all right.
Chan.
And get that guy a laxative, will ya?
We dock at the quay and await our transfer back to the offices at Biocontrol. Chan paces around nervously, like an expectant father, stopping every so often to look out into the forever rolling methane clouds above. The cool sun can barely be seen through the dense clouds as an orange blur or a brownish smudge in the sky. Some days, it can't be seen at all. We sit in a large waiting area, watching the people walk by, getting their transfers, or going to the few waterfront shops that had just been reopened after an extremist bombing only a few weeks ago. It's starting to happen here, too. New tenants bringing new scars, chaser teams aren't immune and have been known to get ambushed. When I joined 10 years ago, I'd been caught out in 2 such attacks. Half my team were wiped out on both occasions. Never saw them coming. Only saw them retreat, disappear into the cool methane mist from which they'd sprung. It was suspected that extremist members sometimes infiltrated teams, leading them right into ambush. But things have been quiet lately.
Drink, Rohan?
Alexei holds out a canister of what we both know to be some sort of alcoholic brew he'd concocted. I take the canister, place it to my lips, and ready myself for the sting. I hold it up to Chan. He shakes his pudgy shaved head. Chan is new on the job, which counts against him in the annoying department. He's younger than most, and his philosophical enthusiasm can make it all rather unbearable at times. He's not out to bag a trophy like most of us, like me. He's supplying the government reservations, although that government-sponsored project is heading for downsizing.
If you don't stop pacing, I'm going to break your legs.
Chan glares at him and takes a seat away from us.
Where's the damn transport?
An hour from here, I say. So cool your jets. We'll file a report, go home and drink a lot. Another hard day's work. At that, I feel sour, thinking about the commission I'll lose. The Minoy. Air flitters that resemble large manta rays, but with wispy tentacles that waver about like Medusa's hair. Never mind the ice moles or the red mountain dogs. The Minoy is big money. Alexei reclines, smokes a cancer-free cigarette, and Chan speaks about the self-regulating system of worlds, the Gaia mothers, the balance out of whack. Although I can't quite understand Chan's philosophies. A fusion of early 21st century eco-New Age Gaia worship and Taoism. I can admire his passion. It may be attributed to his youth or his naive enthusiasm or the natural order of things. But it amounted to little more than heated debates or boring speeches we only half listen to. Being a naturalist member of the popular sect known as The Way, Chan had volunteered for his post rather than applied for it, and we certainly hadn't asked for a guy with next to zero qualifications. But the government likes volunteers.
Artificial ecosystems, they'll never fully stabilize. I mean, learn from history. Whenever an answer to a question is found, nature comes along and changes the formula. It recalibrates, it fine-tunes. Come on, remember what happened at Mars?
Alexei grumbles.
Someone screwed up. Happens.
Being one of the few firsts left, I remember the catastrophe well. Reactivating the Tharsis volcanoes to speed up the atmosphere project had cracked the once solid Martian plates. Earthquakes shook the new world endlessly for a decade. And with the old bacteria awakening, new diseases spread out like locusts. Mars was uninhabitable for a century.
The forces of Tao, Mother Gaia, Father Cosmos, it is all divine. Seek ye harmony, harmony, harmony.
That did it. I crack up. Chan is straight-faced. I put my hands up as if fending off an attack that never comes.
Look, you heard the reports before you left,
he says to me.
You were there. The increase in weather shifting, the blizzards in the middle of a summer day, ocean swells swallowing up huge chunks of land.
We'd terraformed Earth system to suit us. Starvation and unemployment went down to 10% of the overall population. It was hard to imagine why anyone would want to preserve an ecosystem we obviously had no need for anymore. And we'd constructed kilometers of architecture that would rival even the stone geniuses of ancient Europe. Some wildlife were saved in privately sponsored zoos. Most died. Reserved areas of land were used for agriculture. And what was not grown was synthesized. Ironically, after millions of years, we'd become an agricultural society again, the only part of our new lifestyle the extremists agreed with. We did our best to alleviate the world depression of the 21st century. Fleets of sleeper ships migrating outward in droves like an ancient herd of buffalo was merely an extension of a desire to alleviate the pain of overpopulation, to find space, feeding ground.
Balance. Life understands. You do not believe, you will not concede.
Oh, no.
Moans Alexei, holding his stomach as if he's in pain.
Please, spare me the pseudo-spiritual bullshit. I get gas.
I smirk and glance out at the spires and domes of Harbortown. It might make a great painting. I think about that. Although my main function in our new society is in the position of chaser, I'm actually a painter, and was before I left Earth. I wasn't very good, but I had made a small name for myself painting the glittering metallic landscapes of home. Greater Brasilia, the Eurostate, all those mega cities you know of. But my energies had run dry. My life's blood in art seemed to become static. Nothing seemed worth painting that I could be satisfied with. My work was missing something. Maybe always seemed to be missing something. When the opportunity came along by government invitation to enlist in the humility flight, I signed up. They wanted me there at the beginning to watch it happen all over again, shaping and shifting, a recorder of events, an historian for posterity. Why not? I shrugged to myself, accepting the fact that my life's passion had ended. Maybe I'd find a new one, and if not, at least I'd be part of some great adventure. One drunken evening after work, Chan had seen one of my earlier works in the corner of my digs.
Rohan, you don't paint what is important. What does this structure have to do with anything?
We created it. It's aesthetically beautiful. He shook his head.
But it doesn't complement the surroundings. It pushes them aside. It displaces the natural. The achievement of Wu Wei, creating harmony by integration with the universal flow, it's not depicted here.
But surely its aesthetic beauty is as important.
You're an artist. You have the eye, my friend. Now release your spirit.
My comlink chimes and I answer it, placing my helmet back on in order to hear. I can see Chan wait in deathly silence.
Well?
I pull off my helmet and make a 3-second sideways glance at him. Alexei moans. We've got movement. A tall man in military fatigues greets us at the last outpost, the last refuge before the great wilderness. He quickly checks our identification tags and scans us through. We walk through the connection corridor to the outward bound transport. A group of 8 heavily armed men are standing by the vehicle. Alexei frowns and walks out the hatch toward them. A man steps forward. They communicate in a closed frequency. Alexei returns and switches to our channel.
They'll be coming with us,
he says.
Military?
Chan whispers.
Apparently, there's been confirmation of a sighting.
Alexei replies, not sounding convinced.
Manoi in the hills.
So we need them.
Multiple signals. Big herd. We'll need the extra guns.
Chan went silent. I shrug.
Let's go.
The wilderness is vast, unpopulated, and untouched. It would be the logical place for any animals to be hiding. If any herd survived the wave upon wave of chaser onslaught the first 300 years of occupation brought. And within a few decades, more of the wilderness would be gone, beaten down. Anything indigenous that does survive would quickly perish when our atmospheric factories go online, pushed along by irritants and seismic detonators to kickstart volcanism. We had hands for such speedy work because our ship was capable of carrying thousands. Thanks to modern advances, I, and a few firsts like me from the original crew, have lived long and healthy lives, and have been able to see and enjoy the progress. However, as with everything, there are limits, and they say they can keep me alive for another 50 years or so, if I'm lucky. The transport rolls across the slushy reddish snow at top speed, occasionally skidding. Alexei dozes in the back, snoring away and driving Chan crazy with the noise. Every so often, Chan turns around and kicks the seat. Alexei mumbles and falls silent for a spell. The ranking officer we've come to know as Ali orders the vehicle to be stopped at the foothills. Alexei yawns uninterested and lazily picks up his weapon and follows me out. Chan is already out, scanning the thick sky. Every so often we hear popping sounds like distant cannon fire, the sounds of packed snowdrifts trembling in their rocky perches.
We'll have to be quick. Storm front moving in. Everyone, check your suits, then your buddies,
says Ollie.
The transport's cop says there's something in this area.
He waves his team on, ignoring us. Alexei glances at me and shakes his head.
Johnny Gung-Ho. Gotta love him.
We walk in relative silence, guns pointed ahead of us, eyes scanning the thickening fog. Snow begins to filter down. The light of day is beginning to wane. An hour passes. Nothing happens.
Looks like this party could be over before it begins,
Alexei says. The officer's hand goes up. We stop. He signals for his team to fan out. We do likewise. I take the right, Alexei the left. Chan brings up the middle. The mountain peaks once looming all around us are now hidden behind blankets of methane snow.
The transport's cop says there's something in this area,
says Ali.
I don't see a thing.
Chan moves on up ahead of us and off to the right. Ali signals a watchman.
This is such bullshit. Even if we can...
He stops. And I could just make out an expression of shock in his face. Suddenly, the men are silent. They hunch down, scanning the low ceiling of cloud. No one seems to move for a very long time.
Sporadic signals,
says Ali, checking with the transport comp.
Hard to get an accurate number. Interference.
A shadow passes behind a thick curtain of fog. Suddenly, the darkening spaces come alive with red streaks of fire. Shouts from the troops as they blast their way into the encroaching night. After a few minutes, they stop. Ali flags down the watchman.
You get him?
Yeah, I got him,
he says, dragging a body down the slope.
Got him good, too.
He is dragging Chan's body. Ali looks down at him and fires a slug through his faceplate and into his head.
Hell, man!
I say, confused.
He's dead already! What the hell is all this?
Ali ignores me.
Keep your eyes peeled. His buddies are out here.
Alexei looks hard at me.
His buddies?
What's going on?
I say.
Screwed him good,
says someone.
Bloody infiltrator.
Alexei moves forward.
You said jack shit about shooting people out here. What the hell is this? We're supposed to be hunting.
We are.
Ali sneers.
The hell we are. I may be many things, but I'm not a killer, man. No way. To hell with you.
I agree,
I say.
You said nothing about this. What about the herd?
Ali turns to face us, a slight grin perched upon the left side of his face. We soon understand. I hear my own voice quiver.
You can't do this.
Ali regards me for the first time. I can feel the hardness in his eyes.
My orders come from the top.
He moves closer to me, pokes a gloved finger in my chest.
Of all people, you should understand.
I twist his finger away.
I do. And I have no problem defending my team. But I won't do it this way. I won't hunt people. I won't hunt humans.
Terrorists.
Ali sneers. Although Alexei has no sympathy whatsoever with the naturalists, with Chan, he has his limits. I can see he's about to launch himself at Ali, and I throw myself in his way.
Look here. Chan may have been an asshole, but he was no infiltrator, just a dumb kid. There's no ambush waiting for us out there. Even if there were, it does not justify this.
Another shadow passes to the left. The troops repeat the earlier process. Soon there is another shadow, then another, moving, flitting behind blankets of cloud. Something swoops through the smog. A quick, violent scream. Silence.
What the hell? hell was that?
Ollie snaps.
Aziz? Lieutenant, where's Aziz?
I thought he was to my left. I can't see a fucking thing. Stow it!
I yell.
Listen!
Popping sounds like distant cannon fire. The smog wraps around us, tighter, tighter, closing in as the snow comes down. I am sweating. I can't see a damned thing. Visibility is shrinking as the storm moves in. A shadow. A quick motion. Another scream. The team begins discharging their weapons in the air all around. A grenade explodes nearby. We are knocked off our feet.
Keep an eye out on the person nearest you,
says Ollie. Alexei grabs Ollie's shoulder.
You're not getting away with this. A man was murdered.
Lieutenant, lock these two up in the transport.
What? On what charge?
Obstruction of the law.
The law?
Shots fly. I hear them ringing dully through my helmet. The sound waves bouncing through the walls of rock and ice dislodge the snowdrifts. The cannon sounds get louder.
Stop!
I plead.
Don't shoot!
As the two men drag us down the slopes, the ground begins to vibrate ever so slightly, then builds up to a thunderous roar.
Avalanche!
I yell. I hit the ground with a... and stay there.
Son of a bitch!
Alexei shouts. There is a loud swishing. That is the last thing I hear. I don't remember when it was all over, or how I dug myself out. I must have been out for a time. My tank level is low, and I feel the air turning moist and hot. Oxygen thinning to vapors. Kneeling upon the snow now, Alexei's faceplate is smashed. In this atmosphere, he had hemorrhaged his lungs out into the snow. The only other body I find is a man whose name I can't recall. The storm rages. I want to make it back to the transport. Maybe there will be air. Undamaged tanks. My head swims as my tank bleeds dry. Crash onto my back. I lay disoriented. The world swimming in my head. Then something shadowy hovering over me. Wispy fingers, almost ghostly. Managing to get to my feet, I turn to stare it straight in the face. A Minoy. Hovering there in the smog. Great filmy flesh undulating. And this Minoy is large. Larger than any Minoy I have ever seen. I lock eyes with it. For a long while, neither of us move against the other. I am entranced in its bulbous eyes of swimming black currents. And they are all there before me, surrounding me. Great bodies, almost translucent. Wispy touches of milky white against the red snow. Rippling amidst the cool winds. Pushing the cloud about with graceful undulations. Thin filaments waver like streamers, each touching the other with quick flickering movements. Slow. Whispery. They make no move against me, nor any move to retreat from my presence as animals do in the presence of humans. They aren't afraid. I struggle to work my voice, to see clearly, to breathe. For several minutes they hover, then filaments retracting, they turn around and melt away into the mists. The larger one remains for a moment, then backs off, slowly, and vanishes before my eyes like smoke spreading out, thinning into the clouds. The last thing to disappear are its eyes. I awake in a quarantine room in the hospital. They say they found me in the transport. Although the power was offline, the beacon down, they said they zeroed in on some faint signals that seemed to flutter in the vicinity. Extremist movement, they say. Though they hadn't captured any or found any of their bodies. Only Chan's. Someone leans over me, tells me that some woman wants to speak with me. She proceeds into the room, followed by some heavily armed men.
You are Rohan Scott? You knew Chan Lee?
I nod. She hits me with another volley of questions. This goes on for some time. I ask her who survived. She stares me straight in the face. I am the only survivor. I decide not to tell her about the Minoy.
Have you ever been in contact with the naturalists? What do you know about the Way?
I've never known the Way to be a violent group. Nothing. She sniffs and writes something down on a pad. After a few days, I'm discharged. Escorted to a habitat, but it's not my own. A solitary one. My belongings moved in for me. I'm not allowed visitors, nor am I allowed to travel beyond the confines of this complex. I ask when I can leave. They say that all depends on me. Sometimes the woman returns to ask me more questions. I browse the few posted news nets that I'm allowed to access. They are briefs concerning the rise of terrorism. Something about an ambush in the wilderness, and its single survivor. Chan is mentioned, but no word of the avalanche. There's a curfew in place. I've started dabbling in paint again. I think it's coming back to me. And maybe I'll show something for it this time. And sometimes, just sometimes, I can feel the rumblings of the earth beneath me as the distant and newly awakened volcanoes vomit their insides out, Gaia speaking in soft gurgles. And I think about the Minoy staring at me from the clouds. And I could swear that it was seeing something distant and far truer than anything I could see. And that it understood it, lived it, its life energy swirling in constant motion behind those great bulbous eyes. Thank you for listening to Mother Tongue by Carmelo Rafala. Narrated by Rick Stringer, with the voices of J. Marcus Xavier, John Samar, Jack Hawsley, Neil Stringer, Tony McCartney, and Anne Stringer. We will have more information about them on our show notes, on our MySpace and LiveJournal pages. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like Variant Frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Ann Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
This is Chuck Tomasi from Technorama, Gmail Podcast, Freestyle, and Radio Yesterday, and I need your help. On August 11, 2007, I will be participating in a charity event to raise money for the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. The Karate America Schools of the Fox Valley are holding their annual kickathon at historic Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin, home of the Green Bay Packers. Let's show the karate community what the Potosphere can do. Your pledges will help kids in need get the best possible medical care. Our family has directly benefited from CHW, and this is one way I like to say thanks. You can help by going to firstgiving.com/ctomasi, that's C-T-O-M-A-S-I, or use the kickathon icon at chuckchat.com/technorama to use the secure online donation. Give a little or give a lot, any amount is appreciated. You do your part and I'll do mine, and together we'll make a difference. Thank you.
There were those who thought the dawn of the second space age would unite humanity in a common cause. They were wrong. The phantoms that haunt us today will haunt us tomorrow. War. Corruption. Poverty. Injustice. but there is always hope.
Silent Universe.
With a full cast of voice actors, sound effects, and music, it's like primetime drama for your ears. Subscribe now at www.silentuniverse.com.
Hi, I'm your roving reporter, Jack Hosley, a.k.a. the Wonder Wolf, on the streets looking for people who have listened to Wonder Radio and getting their opinions. Excuse me, miss, what's your name?
I'm Megan.
And what do you like about Wonder Radio?
I love listening to Wonder Radio because it has such a wide variety of my favorite kinds of music, and they have really funny commercials, and I love the dramatized short stories.
There you have it, folks. Straight from Megan's mouth. We've got a wide variety of music, we have funny commercials, and dramatized short stories. So come on over to wanderradio.libsyn.com for radio content beyond the dial. Okay, here's your Tony Box. Jeez.
Are you a procrastinator? Have you been thinking, well, I've heard good things about the audiobook series Heaven and Hell, but I've got other stuff to listen to. Well, hey, don't take my word for it. I just write the dang thing.
Hi, this is Matthew Wayne Selznick, the author of Brave Men Run, a novel of the Sovereign Era at bravemenrun.com, and I'm here to tell you, Murr Lafferty's podcast novels Heaven and Hell are a literary afterlife amusement park, full of surprises, terror, and joy. If you haven't visited, now's the time, as a whole new land has opened. Earth. No lines, no waiting. Listen to Heaven, Hell, and get ready for Earth.
Season 3 of Heaven is dropping June 23rd at patiobooks.com. And if you haven't listened to Heaven or Hell yet, they're still available at patiobooks.com. They're all three ready for you. Now, what are you waiting for?
After a long silence, one podcaster returns from the Podfade Abyss to begin again. Nitwitch's Sci-Fi Fantasy Zone is back for Season 2.
Hey everybody, I'm Nitwitch, and I'll be your host for an all-new season of adventures in science fiction and fantasy storytelling. Join me for the Zone's first live interview of the season with Nora K. Jemison, author of the short stories Lao Kamista and Cloud Dragon Skies. On Thursday, August 2nd at 7 p.m. Mountain Time Zone, you can call in to ask questions and talk to the author about her work.
Call in and join Nitwitch at author Nora K. Jemison live on Thursday, August 2nd. Visit the website at nitwitchzone.com for more information. Hop the next wormhole and enter the zone, Nitwitch's Sci-Fi Fantasy Zone.